This is Sean with Voices of SAE, and I'm got a gentleman on the phone by the name of Mike Turner. Mike, how you doing?
Not too bad. How you doing, man?
I'm good, and you wanted to have your little intro song. You know, we got to pay homage to Petty, so yeah. Here we go. On the back of the SAE yard when everybody's drunk and passed out from the night before. That's when the sun was beating down. How about that for a little intro for you there, Mike?
Yeah, the sun was the enemy of a lot of guys coming up around Saturday, Sunday morning. So, yeah.
You're right. All right, so where do you live now?
Just outside of Fort Wayne, New Haven.
Outside of Fort Wayne, and what's your career or what's your industry you're involved with?
Right now I'm doing afternoons on 98.9 The Bear under the name of Mike Davidson. So
nice. So how long have you been a jockey?
I've been doing radio in some capacity since high school, at least on the non-commercial aspect of things. I didn't really get into FM radio, like commercial radio, until like 2003 when I started part-time at WKHY in Lafayette. So, and then just kind of went from there.
So what do you love about it?
I love the whole thing about it. I love the fact that I can interact with listeners and have some amusing anecdotes put on the air. And of course, I'm working on a format that I'm very familiar with because I grew up listening to classic rock and alternative rock my high school days. And so it kind of goes hand in hand.
Okay.
And I've always said that with rock music, I mean, country music's big in Indiana, but as far as rednecks go, rock music is the other white meat. So.
All right, so where'd you go to high school?
I went to Warren Central, graduated there from 98. That's actually where, like I said, I started doing radio. They had a 180-watt non-commercial station, WEBM. And I signed up for that because I was like, man, I really want to do this for a living. And my dad was like, do you understand what you're getting into? And I said, oh, sure, yeah. And, of course, I'm totally lying my ass off to him because I had no idea. And even today, like, some of the stuff I've gone through in radio has been kind of like, I could have done that better. So
Right. So when is that why you picked Ball State, because of the telecom, because of that whole college?
Yeah, because there's the TCOM college, and of course, Dave Letterman was from Indy. He also went to Ball State. I was a huge fan of Dave Letterman growing up. Didn't quite get the late night show like he did, but it came down to either Ball State or IU. I did the weekend visitation of Ball State, and seeing how it was a fairly small campus, I was kind of lazy, and I didn't want to walk too far. That's what ultimately won out. So,
okay. So after you left high school and you went to Ball State, what was the path to SAE? Like, who was the first people that really got you connected, or how did that go?
Kind of accidental, actually, because I just remember before going to Ball State, my dad said, just don't live your entire life in a dorm room. You know, don't think, okay, all you have to do is just study. My dad was a fraternity guy at the University of Cincinnati. Not an SAE, but he went to a fraternity, so I started checking out some of the houses, and I went to one of the rush events at SAE, got along okay with some guys, but I think it was like on a car ride back to the dorm, Sam Morgan, I think, was in one of the cars with us.
Okay.
He's a big row. Yeah, and very nice, relaxed dude, and we just started talking about rock music, and I think they kind of clicked with some guys, and we're like, all right, well, let's give this dude a shot.
So when you rushed, how many guys end up being in your pledge class?
Well, it was a fairly small pledge class. Even after we had like a little bit of an open rush, I think at most at any time we had 11. Six guys went through ultimately, and I think five went active out of that. So it was kind of a tight-knit group. It made for some very interesting times because, I mean, I know that some of the blood classes before us were larger and, of course, could maybe handle a little more of the task load
Right.
That comes with pledging.
Yeah,
But
totally.
if one guy messed up, I think we've heard a little bit more about it when that happened. So.
Yeah, but we started with 27 and we ended with like, I don't know, 20 or something.
That's still
17,
huge. Yeah.
something like that, you know. But what, so why do you think it was like around that time? What do you think it was? Now looking back, what do you think was the reason that there was such a small class for that time?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure. I just know that the guys that made it through worked their asses off and did very well. Remember one dude in particular. You know the term Muncie Rat, right? Like, county guy. He was a Muncie Rat, this one dude. And all he did was drink, smoke pot. He was notorious womanizer. And he ended up failing out. He got like a 0.6. So I don't think he was really committed to all the other ideals of SAE. He just kind of the perks of like, well, you party all the time, that's all you do. And it's like, no, you kind of have to work a little bit at this, you know? So,
So what were some of the
but.
aspects of like the traditional things we had to learn and us and comparable to the other houses? What are some of the things that you really respected that really stood out that you're like, you know, this is why I want to be part of these guys?
Well, I mean, like in pledge class, when we were pledging, getting around to know all the brothers, like, there was that goal of getting around to knowing where they're from, their own pledge class, their own towns, and just, talking with them. That was something that was both interesting and kind of scared me at the same time because I was a notoriously shy person, and I still am in some regard. Because I just, it's hard to open up to people, But, after a while, you find out that a lot of these guys, they like the same things you do. They joke about the same things you do. And it made it a lot easier. It didn't seem like high school where it's like, okay, you live in this township. This is the school you're going to go to. It's like, you chose to go to Ball State. You chose to rush this house. This house took you under its wing. So it's, I wouldn't say more relaxed, but it just seemed a little more inviting. And I think that's what kind of won me over is the fact that, you knew about all the older guys and you learned more about the younger guys once you made it through.
So what's some of those first memories when you actually were, now you're in, now you passed pledgeship, or it might have been going through pledgeship or whatever, but just some funny memories of some guys doing some crazy things at the house or just, bonding situations or road trip situations. Just what are some of the flashbacks you got?
What's the statute of limitations on some stuff here?
Try to be cool. Just make sure it's not criminal. Let's say that,
Right.
right?
There's a couple of stories, but they still might be criminal. I remember I didn't drink until after I was done with pledgeship because I was like, okay, not just because I was a pledge, but this was like my first semester away from home. I wanted to make sure I wasn't going to flunk out of school first, So I ended up getting a 3.27, not too bad for a semester. And then, of course, we made it through. And I was like, all right, now I'm going to drink. I never drank before in my life. And so, like, I was like a loud, obnoxious lush the first few times I started pounding beers. And I think at one point, I was lying on the pool room floor playing with Nate Yoakam's feet for some odd reason while he's trying to, talk with his girl. And he told me this next morning, and I felt really bad because I wouldn't do this sober, obviously, but it was just like, I'm thinking, this is funny because I'm like 13 beers into something, So it was kind of like the country mouse, kind of learning how to kind of unwind a little bit, but it was just, I was. It took me a while to kind of understand, okay, act like you've drank before,
And who was your sweetheart back then?
There's a few. I know, I think the last one that we had in the house was Heather Kramer, and I think she had the distinction of being a GDI or, goddamn independent.
Really?
And, she was a very, yeah, she was a very cool girl,
Not even a sorority. That's unique.
But I think Michelle Friend was also a sweetheart at one time. See, because I was listening to some of the other podcasts, and sometimes just things blur. Like, I tried thinking about some of the things that I did with certain people. I'm like, well, who was with me at that time? And I realized, well, there's a lot of people involved. So,
So what positions and what things were you involved with on campus and positions at the house?
well, I mean, in the house, I think I was at one point, I rose to eminent treasurer at one point, and that's fun, trying to get money from people and getting them to pay bills and keep the lights on. College-wise, the only thing I really did outside of the house was I worked at the college station, WCRD. And that's where I would take my big honking book of like 200, 300 CDs to the station and, play my music. And it was kind of a college radio station, but all they had was all the underground bands that nobody's ever heard of. So I would come in, I would play like Nirvana, Metallica, Led Zeppelin, and that sort of stuff. So,
Did Kingsley still DJ at the house at all?
what was that?
Kingsley, did he ever DJ at the house? He's
I
a
think
Jamaican
Dennis Rose.
DJ. Jamaican DJ Kingsley.
I think Dennis Rosseff did for a bit,
Dennis Rosseff.
and
That's funny. So, where did you go on walkout? Or did you guys go on walkout or?
God, we went to, I want to say it was Western Michigan. I think we went to Kalamazoo, and that was all right. We went up there. It was fun because we went to other house parties. We went up to SAE there, and there was not a whole lot going on that weekend. So I think we just went elsewhere and drank. And but I think the most fun walkout I went to, I'm drawing a blank on the pledge class, but it was a senior year. We went to Illinois State, and we did a whole lot of drinking there. And we drank on the way there in the van. We were all kind of hungover the next day on the way back, but that was a lot of fun.
That's cool.
So,
So outside of,
yeah.
like, did you go on any vacations or anything with any of the guys or?
Well, I didn't have a lot of money in college. I think the closest thing to a vacation we ever did, a handful of us, spring break, we went up to luxurious, sunny Angola, Indiana for like the last for like the first weekend of March, and it was actually a freakishly warm start to the week. Like it was in the 80s, so we went out and we drank, we boated, we fished, we got sunburned, but by the end of the week it was snowing.
Wow, oh God.
Yeah, and
That's
we were nursing one keg the entire week, and of course, when you first tap it, it's great, but then like 5 days later, oh, flat as hell.
it's just like piss water, technically, kind
Yeah,
of.
yes.
So what are some of the other just, I don't know, special moments, things that were hilarious, just flashback things that you remember happening at the house?
Oh man, I remember one night. Like I was sober actually this night, and I went back to the house, and there was a guy that I was living with active in the house. I think it was Sam Huff, and I don't know how long he'd been drinking. I don't know what he was drinking, but somehow he got a hold of the fire extinguisher, and he fired it up in the cloud, and it covered a bunch of cars. And he's laying on his back, just going, "It's a nothing cloud," and he's just laughing his butt off. And I'm thinking, "Oh my God, he's going to get in trouble." So me, trying to be the good brother, I go back to our house, I get a T-shirt, and I start trying to wipe off the cars. Well, there's things in the fire hydrants or the fire extinguishers, like fiberglass that scratch up car paint. So I ended up making that a lot worse than it needed to be. Thankfully, nobody got kicked out of the house for that, but it was kind of a funny moment. Of course, I felt really bad about it because I was trying to help one guy out, and I ended up making things a little worse. So,
How do you think it made you better for career, life, just the structure of the whole thing with fraternity and whatnot and the guys? How do you think it really helped you after school?
like I said earlier, you really get to know a lot of the guys in the house. Like, I grew up in kind of a quiet, restricted house, and then I got out to college, and of course, met other people, and I think I learned a lot more from the house than I did like in class instruction, because when you get when, I, when I'm on the phones talking with listeners, you know, I it's a way of relating to them.
Right.
You know, you learn a different perspective. You learn that people don't necessarily think the way you do, but you kind of get a conversation going that way. You make them feel more comfortable, and that's kind of something I learned, and it really helped me when I got into broadcasting, and I think it helped me, you know, challenge myself too, because I remember graduating spring of 2002 from the TCOM college, and they were talking about all these degrees that were going out into the real world for TV and radio. But those industries have really not been good the last couple of decades. So it kind of helped me learn how to kind of fight and be persistent and continue doing what I'm doing.
Hey, so this I just kind of popped in my head. So you were there at 9/11, right? Right when the shit went down.
Yeah, I was.
So being in the broadcast mindset, what was going through your head about the whole situation? Where were you? And if you could just kind of speak on that.
Well, it was a really terrible day. And I think like for the next several months, we didn't know what the hell else was going to happen. But I remember coming back from the library early Tuesday morning, passing out because I just couldn't get a project done. And same guy I told you about with the fire extinguisher, Sam Huff, actually knocked on my door. He goes, "Dude, turn on the news." And that's when I saw the smoking buildings. And I was just like, holy crap. And I actually saw one of them fall. And then I actually went to class. The next class was like at 9:30. And on my way to class, the second tower had fallen. And we were just sitting. There's like three or four different classes in the TCOM building sitting in one little mini auditorium watching the news coverage. I think there was a couple of classes like that throughout the week. Oddly enough, the one class that I missed was because I was too tired, and that was prior to all this stuff. I went to every class after the towers fell, and that really dominated a lot of the conversation. Just to watch something like that happen as a, you know, never in my wildest imagination would I ever think something like that would ever happen.
How were they either enhancing your support, or like what was the professor's angles on you guys, the students, on how, like, what's going to happen next and how it should be reported and da da da? Were they really trying to use this as a leverage point to show you what real news is all about? Or
I think in some ways, yeah. But I mean, you can show somebody, a glass of water half full or half empty, and they're going to tell you it's all half full or half empty. And they have their thoughts and everything, but there's always going to be a unique perspective on something like that. I just think overall, even though some people had their opinions, there was a lot of fear those that week and probably like several months after that, because people just didn't know what was going to happen. This was like, I mean, you recall the Trade Center getting bombed. Was it 93, 94?
Yeah.
Car bomb?
Yep.
And that was scary. But you know, these buildings fell. Thousands of people died. We were just like, I still can't believe it's been almost 20 years since that happened.
Right.
And it still kind of scares me a little bit.
Has that been an aspect of media that you've, I mean, being a radio jock and playing some music's one thing, but getting out there and, you know, being a part of a life-changing moment and reporting on it, has that ever been a part of your path, or has that ever been like a want in your career path of kind of being down in the nitty-gritty when it's going down?
Well, it really depends. I mean, with 98.9 The Bear, it's not exactly C-SPAN or any of the cable news networks. But I mean, if something happens, say like a couple weeks ago, you know, Tiger Woods was in that, you know, car wreck.
Right.
I made mention of that on air a couple times, but I didn't like, you know, stop what I was doing and make it all about Tiger, because, you know, there are other things going on, and I didn't know what the hell was going on, and I didn't want to, you know, interject, well, looks like he was doing this again or that again. I think another better example was like I was on air when it was announced Eddie Van Halen died.
Right. Okay.
And you know, the guy's top five guitar player of all time, not right. The quintessential rock guitarist. And, you know, I was talking with my program director. He goes, well, you know, just, you know, for your open bar, which is a kind of a topic of the day I do at 5 o'clock, he goes, just make it all about Van Halen. And I got tons of calls of people that saw Eddie or met Eddie or knew somebody that met Eddie. And we were playing everything from the Diamond Dave era, the Slam and Sammy era, oddly enough, nothing from the Gary Cherone era. But it was all about Van Halen. So, I mean, there is timeliness to it. But I think the one thing I've learned is, like, when in doubt, leave it out. If you don't know what's going on, don't speculate.
Right.
You know? Because that can be just as dangerous.
Yeah.
Just,
yeah. The wrong news and motivating people in the wrong way.
Yeah.
So overall, is there, you know, just as far as the overall SE experience to younger guys that might be thinking of Russian or even the actives, what would you have to say to them about what they should get out of it?
I would just say that it's a lot of hard work. I mean, I'm sure that a lot of things have changed since I went through, but it is a lot of hard work. Only do it if you feel like you want to do it. I mean, if you're like 17 or 18 and you're thinking about it, you know, if you feel you get along with these guys, like you could have a beer with them even outside a fraternity setting. That's the right reason. Don't just do it just to impress people. You know, it's because you feel like you belong there, and they, you know, you and these guys can go off and do some really cool things.
I agree.
So, I mean, that's kind of where I'm at. I mean, just do it because you feel that you can do it, and you know, you don't have to impress everybody.
Right.
So.
All right. Well, right on, Phi Alpha. Anything else you want to add? Are you good? Or last?
I think I'm all right.
You think you're all right? All right. Well, listen, just stay on the line. And Fauf and I really appreciate you being one of the guys to be able to help, you know, with the fundraising and everything. And I know the other guys that you know, hopefully they'll be able to tell their stories and get on board too.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, John.
All right. Stay on the line. Bye-bye.